Just in time for Reformation Day, Concordia Publishing House has a new graphic novel titled Luther, Echoes of the Hammer. This Luther biography is written and illustrated in a fun, comfortable format. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Or you can purchase Luther, Echoes of the Hammer by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. This new Reformation resource costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Luther, Echoes of the Hammer, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love issues, etc.
Jesus appears to be kind of picking a fight in the text we're going to be looking at today during our pastor's roundtable. At least if you pick up in the first verse of Luke chapter 14, you might get the impression that Jesus is spoiling the party. It's a banquet, some kind of a banquet that's being held by a leader of the synagogue. And of course, his opponents are watching him carefully, but Jesus picks a fight. He raises a question about whether you should heal on the Sabbath, and then he does without even waiting for a response. And then he notices that the attendees to this banquet are taking the best seats, and he has something to say about it. I mean, if you invited Jesus to a party, do not expect him to be the life of the party. He's going to ruin things. He notices stuff, and he doesn't hold anything back. At least that's what it seems like from this reading in the first 11 verses of Luke chapter 14. The healing of the man on the Sabbath that Jesus does at someone's party. And then he tells a parable, which is hardly a parable. It sounds like advice on how to attend a wedding feast, but it has to be more than that. It's Thursday, October the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. It's our Pastor's Roundtable for the first hour of the program. Pastor Randy Asbury, Pastor Chris Eskett will be our guests. In the second hour of the program, we'll be talking with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service about media coverage of the spirituality of Steve Jobs. Is it true? He was a Buddhist at the end of his life, as far as anyone can tell. Some have speculated he also had another religion, his business, or at least the technology that was his business. Certainly was a religion for a lot of people. The cult of Mac is a term that we hear all the time nowadays. We'll talk about the spirituality of Steve Jobs. And then Gretchen Pasentino joins us from Answers in Action in Costa Mesa, California. Harold Camping made the prediction that the world would end on May 21st. And then when that didn't happen, he was disappointed, but he was not put off, because he turned right around and quickly said, no, it will be October 21st, which by the calendar is just a little more than a week from now. So we'll talk about his end times teachings and Harold Camping's general theology with Gretchen Pasentino. Now, you can join us with a question or a comment for the next 2 hours. And in the first hour of the program, the listener with the best question or comment will receive a copy of the Lutheran Study Bible. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email with questions or comments on the healing of the man on the Sabbath or the parable of the wedding feast for our pastor's roundtable. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc or leave a question or a comment for the pastor's roundtable at our Facebook fan page. Search Issues Etc. on Facebook or go to facebook.com/issuesetc. Pastor Randy Asbury is a regular guest. He's pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Louis. He joins us here in the studio. Randy, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be back.
And on the phone from Alexandria, Virginia, where he's pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Pastor Chris Eskett. Chris, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much, Todd. Great to be on.
Randy, he's picking a fight. I mean, at least within the confines of this text, no one said anything to him. This man comes to him with dropsy. He says, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? He heals them. The man without any instigation from his opponents. What's Jesus doing?
Wow, you really make Jesus sound like an ogre here, picking a fight, spoiling a dinner party. Actually, as the saying goes, there's probably more to the story than we first see here. We have to go back to chapter 13 and see that the Pharisees have been dogging Jesus all along. They've been scrutinizing him, wondering, is he going to keep the law? Is he going to step out of bounds? And he even heals on the Sabbath day back in chapter 13 as well. So this is kind of like an ongoing spat, an ongoing feud, if you will, where the Pharisees have their eye on Jesus and he knows it. And so, yes, he might be trying to tweak them a little bit here, and that's the clue we get in chapter 14. They are watching him. Yes, this ruler of the Pharisees invites him over to dine at a feast, probably the Friday evening feast, you know, Sabbath day and all that, and they're looking for him. They're wanting to see what he's going to do, and so maybe it's a setup of some kind, but you're right. He does not really play by the rules, their rules, that is. He does have something to teach them and us.
Okay, let's set the context if we could then, Chris. What would the Pharisees have believed about Sabbath keeping? And what would they have believed about how Jesus ought to behave on the Sabbath?
Well, they're certainly going to emphasize no working on the Sabbath. And there was a long series of rules that were kept intended to be kind of a fence around the law, so that it's not dissimilar to the second commandment about not misusing the name of the Lord. If we never say it, then we can't misuse it. Likewise, there were restrictions on how far you could walk and so forth. But the emphasis is really going to be on man's work, on what we can do, or more what we cannot do. So that's the expectation, and I think that's what Jesus is trying to overturn here, that it's not man's work that is the focus of the Sabbath, or lack thereof, but it's God's work.
Do you agree, and I think Randy's framed it nicely, this is kind of an ongoing debate. This isn't just that Jesus and the Pharisees disagree about the Sabbath per se, but the Sabbath kind of stands in for the entire system of salvation that the Pharisees had crafted for themselves out of the Mosaic Law?
Absolutely, and Randy's quite right to bring in chapter 13. A woman has come to Jesus who is sick. I forget precisely what her illness was, but she's brought to Jesus, and he heals her on the Sabbath. And the ruler of the synagogue becomes very very angry, and that's when Jesus says something very similar to our passage in chapter 14. Does not each one of you on the Sabbath loose his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it? So shouldn't this woman be loosed from her bond on the Sabbath? He says. So I think the whole idea here, yes, the Sabbath stands for the entire system, and what Jesus, I believe, is doing is really saying that he's not simply breaking a rule or doing something to tweak them, but I think it's a foundational teaching that he, as Lord of the Sabbath, is demonstrating that he, God in the flesh, has come to rescue his creation on the Sabbath day and lead creation then to the eighth day, the new creation.
It sounds like the Pharisees, at least, and the lawyers, that's what they're called here. Experts in the law, I guess we could say.
Yeah, the Old Testament law, not like lawyers, like attorneys like we think of, but lawyers who are experts in the Old Testament law and the rabbinic explanations of them, which were many and varied.
It sounds like they had decided that the Sabbath was, or forgotten what the Sabbath is about, because the Sabbath is a rich concept in the Old Testament that's not just the seventh day, but it's also the seventh year and the 49th year, and there's all this about setting people free and restoring things back to the way they were. The Sabbath was in the Old Testament about restoration.
Yes.
And they had made it about simply keeping the rules about not working.
Right. You can even go back farther to creation. What does God do on the first seventh day or Sabbath day? He rests, but why does he rest? Because he's done with his creation, so the work is over, and now it's time to enjoy his creation, right? So take that into the commandment that he gives in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy, what is it, chapter 5, when he instructs his people, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. He wants the same thing for them. Okay, now you quit your work, and you receive what God has to work on you. to kind of paraphrase Luther's hymn there. So it was their chance to be restored, to rest, be refreshed, all of that kind of thing. Then you trace it through the rest of the Old Testament, even between the Testaments, and I think here's where they go astray. When they come back from exile, they are so nervous about breaking God's laws. As Pastor Esget said, they put up a fence around God's laws. They want to protect God's laws so they don't even go anywhere close to God's laws. And so they're creating their own laws, their own way of not working on the Sabbath day. It becomes a rule and regulation fest, or focusing on my works, our works.
When he asks, Chris, is it lawful? Is he asking them to reference the law itself? That is, what did Moses have to say about this? Or the Old Covenant have to say about this? Or is he asking them, is it lawful in some other sense?
I think he's asking, I mean, it probably has a bit of a dual meaning, and they can see that a trap has been laid for them, and so they don't answer him. But I think he's asking about the deeper meaning of the Sabbath. What, you know, what is its real purpose? And you know, and they want to trap him. They're watching him carefully, but they also have to know at some level that it's fundamentally not wrong to do good to someone else. So,
okay, so
if I can interject here,
with about a minute here.
Okay, the word used there's really not the word for law, but the word for authority. Exousia in Greek
is it authorized?
Authority. Is it authorized, or you know, can one be authorized to help somebody on the Sabbath day? Really, what's behind that question? Not a matter of does it fit the law or the rules, but kind of is it okay? Is it permissible? Is it can I be authorized to heal somebody, to help somebody on the Sabbath day? Seems to be the real question he's getting at.
And he answers his own question by, after they are silent, doing exactly what may or may not be lawful to do on the Sabbath. He heals the man. We'll be right back with our pastor's roundtable.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
How would you like to win the Essential Lutheran Library? Books like Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, Law and Gospel, the Lutheran Service Book, and the Lutheran Book of Prayer, and four more resources. All you have to do is share the Issues Etc. Reformation Week video on your Facebook page and send an email to contest@issuesetc.org. You'll find the video at issuesetc.org and click support. We'll announce the winner of the Essential Lutheran Library on Friday, October 28th.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Thank you.
The National Lutheran Choir singing stanza one of Love Divine, All Love Excelling. We're talking about Luke chapter 14, verses 1 through 11, the healing of the man on the Sabbath, and Jesus' parable of another wedding feast there in Luke chapter 14. On this Thursday afternoon, October the 13th, Pastor Randy Asbury, Pastor Chris Eskett are our guests. Now, you can join us with questions or comments. You can leave your question or comment at our Facebook fan page. Search Issues Etc. from Facebook or go to facebook.com/issuesetc. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, tweet at issuesetc, or just give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Chris, why do they remain silent in both cases? Why first do they remain silent in answer to his question, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? And then when he does heal the man and send him away and asks the second question about which of you having a son or an ox, if it falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out, why could they not reply to those questions?
Well, I think because they have no good answer. They can't answer the question. The rabbinic traditions do vary a little bit from some of the reading that I've done on this as to whether or not it's permissible to rescue a person as opposed to an animal. But I think they don't have any good answer. No matter what they say, they're going to be exposed to shame and ridicule. And you know, it reminds me of a certain professor that I had in seminary that no matter what you said to his answer, he was going to expose you as not as bright as he was. And I think that's what they're afraid of. They have no good answer, no matter what they're going to say.
What would a Pharisee, if not being quizzed by the Lord of the Sabbath, if simply asked the question by a disciple or a catechumen, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? What would they likely have said?
Right? I think they would have said that it's lawful to to rescue someone that's in dire need. And so they're concerned that Jesus is breaking the law, that he's wantonly doing this. But I think they themselves would have done it.
So in other words, it may be that it's not that they don't have an answer, but they don't want to give an answer to this guy. Is that right? Okay.
Or they don't want to give the answer that they're really thinking. You know, that he is wrong, and they have the better way, which would expose their own pride, perhaps.
Does it make a difference, Randy, that he asks about healing? This isn't something that man can do. Healing is something only God can do. And he's essentially asking, or it sounds like he's asking, is it fitting with the Sabbath for God to do something on that day? Because he's not talking about washing dishes or leading your animal away from the stall or even pulling your animal out of a pit. He's talking about taking a person's infirmity and miraculously healing it. I mean, this isn't ordinary work. This is miraculous work, God's work.
This is true. The healing is. Now, they could have been thinking healing like a doctor or what we might call a therapist would do as well. But I think they're caught here because, yes, this is something only God can do, is the healing. And that might be why they can't answer him. Well, we hadn't thought about the healing part. We're just focused on the works part. Don't you dare work on the Sabbath day. And so he's phrasing the question in a much different way. Is it possible? Is it fitting? Is it congruent with the Sabbath day to heal, or as you said before the break, to restore to health? So he's phrasing the question in a much different way than perhaps they're used to. They're thinking just the works. What am I going to do about this?
Okay, then let's talk a little bit about what follows after this. And I don't know if they're related or not. It may just be two stories told on the same occasion. It appears to be the same occasion, beginning at verse 7. Now he told a parable to those who were invited, when he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, "When you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, 'Give your place to this person.' And then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you." And I'll leave verse 11 there for a little bit later. What's this parable about, Chris?
Well, I'd like to answer your preceding question before you read it, which is how are they related? And I think they're related. They're connected by the word son. Which of you having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on the Sabbath day will not immediately pull him out? And here's how I think they're related. Only God can heal, as you said earlier, and this is God's work of healing this man. And I think the deep meaning of this whole section is that we are the son who has fallen into the pit. And the arrogance that is betrayed by the words and response of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law here is demonstrating the same thing that is being demonstrated by those taking the higher places, that they don't see themselves as the one in need of healing, or in the case of the parable of the wedding feast, the one in need of taking the lowest place, of being humble, of being lowly. They see themselves in a position of doing and in a position of superiority. So Jesus is not only upsetting their expectations about the Sabbath, but more fundamentally, their expectations of who they are. They're the one stuck in the pit.
Is there a cultural barrier here that we have to overcome here, Randy? And that is that in our American society, very egalitarian, very equality-oriented, even though we don't really believe that, we just say it. When you, as a pastor, are invited to, say, a wedding reception, if there's no cards telling you where to sit, you are not going to go sit at the head table with the bride and the groom.
Most likely not, no.
It would be considered uncouth for anyone to do that unless they were part of that kind of elite group. You're more likely to take to let other people sit down, let the family sit down closer to the head table, and then kind of take your place near the back of the room. At least that's what I think most pastors would do. But it sounds like culturally it was not unusual for people to go and try and sit at the head table when they were invited to something like this.
Right, because that head table has status. You get to be close to the big people, the main guests, the speaker of honor, whatever the case may be. Maybe a better illustration would be when you go to a Cardinals game and they're in the playoffs. You want to get down close to the field, right? But you bought the cheap ticket up in the general admission nosebleed seats, right? Well, you want to somehow sneak down there and find an empty seat and you can sit there. Well, then the person comes who's holding the season ticket for that seat, and he kicks you out, right? That might be an even better analogy for our culture, because there are times when we do want to be closer to the action, or in the case of this dinner, you know, with the guest of honor. And that's what Jesus is getting at here. Don't be that proud, arrogant kind of person that says, I deserve to be up close to that action, next to the guest of honor or something like that. Take the humble seat. Take that general admission seat in the nosebleed section, and then the host can welcome you down to the seats close to the field.
This is one of those kind of parables that's far deeper than it appears, Pastor Eskett, because the man who speaks this parable at this wedding feast is, in fact, in the very process of doing what he's telling everyone else to do. I mean, he is, in the greatest sense possible, taking for himself the lowest place in the world right now as he speaks these words, and he is in time going to be exalted to the highest place.
Yes, well, that's exactly right. I think that you know, it's a general rule that if your interpretation of a parable doesn't find a prominent place for Jesus in it, then you've got it wrong. And yeah, he's the meaning of the parable. He's the one that's taken the lowest place, or in the language of Philippians 2, he's emptied himself. And so this is I think this is instruction also for for how we approach God, how we approach worship, is we need to humble ourselves and place ourselves lowly. I find it interesting how people often jockey for seats even at church. There's something about Lutheranism. People want to, that somehow the back seat has become the best seat. And I don't know what that is. If it's saying, I'm not worthy of being up in the front and I want to be as far back, or if they just, want to be able to duck out if things start going too long. But I also find it fascinating how where people put me at a wedding, because I've been put at the head table before when I absolutely did not expect it, and And when I expected, you know, maybe by virtue of being closer to the family or something, to have had a more prominent place, not that I wanted it, it sometimes hasn't happened. But I think people are they're making a statement about what they think of the ministry and the church there at their wedding. I mean, I'd really prefer to be as far back as possible. I guess I'm a Lutheran too.
Well, I think I'd prefer to be closest to the bar, tell you the truth. Just keep the walk short.
There you go.
When we come back, we'll continue with our Pastor's Roundtable on this Thursday, October the 13th. Pastor Randy Asbury is pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Louis, and Pastor Chris Eskett is pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Issues Etc. Reformation Week begins on October 24th. 5 days of Reformation-themed programs with some of your favorite guests. And here's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen. It's a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. Reformation Week. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Reformation Week bulletin insert. We have 4 different bulletin inserts, one for each time zone. Issues Etc. Reformation Week.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Too Lutheran for a Lutheran radio station. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
America's abortionists are upset about how they're being treated. They don't like being ostracized by the medical community and patients. Abortionists also don't like that most abortions are done at abortion mills, not credible health clinics. As a result, they want to normalize abortion. This means making it available in more places and by more people. There's an effort to allow nurses, physician assistants, and midwives to become abortionists. Abortion activists are relying in part on RU-486, the abortion pill, to make all this possible. There's a reason abortionists are shunned. They kill innocent unborn babies for a living. They also maim millions of mothers in the process, both physically and emotionally. The spiritual devastation is beyond words. It's time to stop legal abortion on demand.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Luke chapter 14, the healing of a man on the Sabbath and the parable of the wedding feast with Pastor Randy Asbury and Pastor Chris Eskett. Pastor Randy Asbury is pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Louis, part of the Issues Etc. 300, by the way, as is Pastor Chris Eskett, who's pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia, another congregation that's part of the Issues Etc. 300. Now, if you listen carefully, I think you hear every once in a while a spot that runs here in the break on Issues Etc. for Hope Lutheran Church. There's still hope in St. Louis or something like that, voiced by our guest, Pastor Randy Asbury. That's one of the things that pastors of 300 congregations can do for their congregation, as well as a mention in the Issues Etc. journal and the Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Find out how your congregation can join the Issues Etc. 300. Support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to the tune of $1,000 or more in their mission or advertising budget annually. Our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. You'll find a one-page flyer. Print that off and take it to your congregation. A lot of congregations are right now making budget decisions, and this is a good time to suggest that the congregation include Issues Etc. in its budget. Mike is listening in Kansas City. Thanks for waiting, Mike.
Yeah. Hi, Pastor Wilkin. Thank you. And I wish people listening would consider supporting Issues Etc. It's a great resource. And I'm going to ask you gentlemen a question about this parable in particular, and then a couple related to a couple of others also. And the reason I'm going to ask you the question is because I was always taught with these parables that they were nothing more than life lessons for me to learn from. and to apply to my life. And I know it can be part of it, but what I'm asking about is the primary purpose of the parable. And you all touched on something that I've always wondered about. Christ is almost being intentionally antagonistic towards the Pharisees, and I'm really wondering if the primary purpose isn't to antagonize them, to move on towards his crucifixion so that the Old Testament prophecies would be fulfilled.
That's a very good question. I had not considered that possibility. Thank you for listening in Kansas City, Mike. Pastor Eskett, what do you think?
I suppose it's possible. I don't think he's deliberately trying to provoke them in order to kill them, or in order for them to kill him, to bring him to the crucifixion. I think he's preaching the law in this, that the law is revealed in their behavior, in their place in this parable as seeking the higher place. But I do think that in all of Jesus' teaching and preaching, that he is at the center of it. He is at the fulfillment of it. So he is the one that takes the lowest place. So I guess I come back to a Christocentric reading of it, that Jesus is at the center, and that's the real meaning of it. And for them, I think he just wants to expose their sin and try and bring them to repentance, not simply to provoke them to bring about the crucifixion. In that way of reading, to me, that Jesus wouldn't really care about the Pharisees, and I think he does. I think he cares about them deeply.
Yes, I think he does care about them. I think he also knows what's going to happen. In Luke's gospel, it's a very unique little detail. In chapter 9, Luke goes out of his way to say Jesus turned his face to go to Jerusalem. And from that moment on, I think everything after chapter 9 has this little shadow of the cross hanging over it. So this story is no different. And even if you get the running start like we did earlier from chapter 13, back in, what was it, verse 22, Jesus went on his way through towns and villages teaching and, get this, journeying toward Jerusalem. There's that little hint of a shadow again. So it's still under this cross, the shadow of the cross, I mean, that he's going toward Jerusalem. And I think this is on Jesus' mind, that he is going to end up on the cross. These are going to be the people who put him there, but he does care for them. He does love them. He does want to forgive their sins, even by virtue of his own death on the cross.
While he may not be manipulating the Pharisees, kind of doing double whammy or the reverse psychology on them,
right,
to bring about his crucifixion, don't we still have to affirm that it's no accident? He knows it's going to happen. He knows how it's going to happen. And ultimately, he is guiding the events leading to the cross. He's not a victim of circumstance.
Right. I think that's a good way to say it. He's not the victim. He is guiding it, even though he's going to be the sacrificial victim, if you will. But he's in control of this.
Okay, then let's look at verse 11, where Jesus caps it all off, saying, for everyone, and this is kind of one of those broad-scope universal statements, axiomatic, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. If it's not just a little moral lesson, Pastor Eskett, what is that statement?
Well, I don't think it's a moral lesson. I mean, there certainly is, good morality to be found in there. But what I think is going on is it's a call to repentance. Luther, I think it's in a commentary in one of the Psalms. He has this line, whoever honors himself is going to be confounded. Whoever praises himself will be disparaged. Whoever affirms himself will be denied. And he goes on and on like this. Whoever makes himself beautiful will be made ugly. But then he reverses it. Whoever makes himself ugly is made beautiful. Whoever weakens himself becomes strong. Whoever makes himself low is made noble, and so forth. So what I think is going on with this line is the same kind of thing that Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11. If we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. And what's unspoken there is we would not be judged by God. So in approaching God, we need to make ourselves humble. If we don't, if we come to God with a sense of pride, then he's going to make us low. And if we treat our neighbor in that respect as well, he's going to make us low. But if we make ourselves low by repentance, recognizing that we're the one thrown into the pit in need of rescue, then he's going to rescue us. He's going to lift us up.
We have really clever ways of turning humility into pride, or allowing pride to express itself as false humility. I mean, it's just, especially as Americans, at least if you go to, say, Oriental honor-based cultures, they're far more honest about it. Father or mother, they expect to be honored. They don't hold the door for their kids. They expect the kids to hold the door for them. We live in this egalitarian society, especially as we deal outside the family, where we're constantly feigning humility, yet taking pride in it all along. Talk about that, if you would, Pastor Asbury.
Reminds me of the story of somebody who took one of those spiritual gift inventories, and they found that one of their greatest strengths was their humility. And then they went on to boast about that. yeah, you're right. We kind of turn things around to our own advantage. And that's what Jesus is getting at here. Don't exalt yourself. Don't lift yourself up, but rather take the lowest place. Humble yourself. Don't be presumptuous. Don't think you have the rights and privileges just because you're a human being walking around, let alone a Christian. Or let alone God's child. You know, take the lowest place, just like Jesus did. It's very fascinating. Jesus uses the same words in several different contexts, but one in particular is when he tells the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. And he tells that story, and it's the Pharisee who's boasting in himself. It's the tax collector who beats his breast, can't even look up to heaven, sits in the back of church, and says, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." And then Jesus throws the same exact line in there. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted. So we have this in two different places here. And I think it is before God and before your fellow human beings. Right here, you have a hint. When you're going to dinner with somebody else, you know, humble yourself even before your fellow human beings. That is very hard because we like to have our rights, our privileges, our equality, as you mentioned, in our culture.
Derek writes, he says in Luke 14:11, "For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Would this point to the importance of understanding that our salvation is not from works, but dependent on Christ's death and resurrection? Pastor Eskin.
Yeah, I think it absolutely would. Exalting yourself is to trust in your own works. Humbling yourself is to say, I have no works in which I can boast. It's only in Christ's work. I'd agree with that completely.
We could even say humbling yourself is confessing your sins.
Yes.
Putting them out there in the open so all can see. That's very humbling, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's not only humbling in an emotional sense. It is humility. I mean, it's genuine godly humility, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't come to me naturally.
Exactly. It is hard to put my sins out there before God, but also if I go to a father confessor before another human being. That is hard because guess what? Somebody knows my deep, dark secret now, and I have to be humble. I have to live with whatever sin I committed and realize, oop, it's not secret anymore. Somebody knows it. Well, God knows it too, and that's the humility of confessing our sins.
Derek in Seward, Nebraska says, "I could see how someone like Joel Osteen would read this passage and say that it's about showing honor to your neighbor and receiving honor in return." In fact, I'm pretty sure Joel has actually preached that once or twice. How could you read this passage in light of Christ's full teaching and acts for our salvation? Thanks, love the show. Pastor Eskett, about a minute before we go to respond to that comment.
Well, in light of Christ's full teaching, I guess I'd point back to he is the one who humbles himself, who makes himself low. If it's simply a matter of the law, then this is just one more thing to perform. That runs contrary to everything that he's talking about here. The Sabbath and all the law in general is not made for us to do that we might find life in it. I mean, if we could perform it perfectly, we would. But it reveals to us our sin. It shows to us our sin. So, you know, Christ as humbling himself, making himself lowest, and that really culminates in the section in John 13 where he washes his disciples' feet. He makes himself their servant. He's the embodiment of the servant of all mankind, the king who makes himself a servant.
All right, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when we come back, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. Jesus actually does this himself, and we'll talk about that John passage with our pastor's roundtable after this.
You humble me, Lord. You humble me, Lord. So please, please, please forgive me.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
If any former evangelicals are hearing me speak right now, I want to assure you, you don't have to be a homeless Christian. If you would go to issuesetc.org, look on their website, you'll find a list of churches. Find one close to you and attend that church. There, you can receive the true gospel, you don't have to be a homeless Christian, and they will not call you a backslider.
To find a church near you, go to issuesetc.org and click Find a Church.
Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Whether vacationing in Branson or boating on Table Rock Lake, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church in Kimberling City, Missouri is your Christ-confessing congregation. Every week, Christ comes to us through the preached word and sacraments, by which we are strengthened and kept in the one true faith. So come to where Christ comes to you. Come to Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, 103 Kimberling Boulevard in Kimberling City, Missouri. For more, see our website at sothl.com.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Stanza 3 of Tell Out My Soul the Greatness of the Lord, sung by the choir of St. Paul Cathedral. That's got to be one of my favorite hymns. Unbelievable hymn. We're talking with our pastor's roundtable for another 10 minutes on this Thursday afternoon, October the 13th, about the healing of the man on the Sabbath in Luke 14, along with the parable of the wedding feast. We always give away, on these Friday pastor's roundtables, the Lutheran Study Bible. Only one person gets it. Best question or comment. But you can still have the Lutheran Study Bible for yourself. Call Concordia Publishing House and ask for this great resource that has consolidated into a remarkably short volume. I mean, for a study Bible, it's still a big, thick book. Remarkably short volume, a lot of very good scholarship on the text and good explanations, the kind of stuff that you can really rely upon when you're studying the Bible, either at home or in church. Find out about the Lutheran Study Bible. Order one from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Now, let's deal with I was thinking about this during the break. The Pharisees, I mean, just in terms of the actual context of this event, the Pharisees are faulted elsewhere by Jesus, if I'm not mistaken, for loving the places of honor in the marketplace. I think at one point he's going off on the Pharisees, and he says they love the places of honor on the marketplace. Is he in some sense also speaking particularly to this Pharisee, to these Pharisees, about their penchant for receiving honor from men? Randy?
Yes, think of, what is it, Matthew chapter 6, when he teaches on prayer. The Pharisees love to stand on the street corner and pray out loud and with lots of words. Why? So they can be seen by men. And remember how Jesus critiques them there. They have the reward. So yeah, he's critiquing them all the way through. They love this honor from men. They wear their nice flowing robes so they can be seen. And, oh, there are the important people, the Pharisees, be put up on that pedestal, at least in the minds of other people, they hope. And so, yes, he's getting at that very thing here in this setting of a meal, a Sabbath meal, you might say. He says, don't look for the first places. Don't look for those seats of honor. Take the lowest place. Humble yourselves. Just like, as we've talked about earlier, just like Jesus himself is humbling himself.
Pastor Esker, you're out there near the seat of power, not too far from our nation's capital.
Yeah, I'm totally out of touch inside the Beltway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I'm not making any political statement about you or about your congregation, but I'm certain that there are members of your congregation. In fact, I know a few of them who are, well, you know, these are the kind of people who get their names mentioned on television, who have bylines in major national newspapers. And I say with no small pride, some of them are friends of mine. You know, the older I get, I realize that if you just stick around long enough, you'll know important people. It has nothing to do with being important yourself. If you just stick around long enough, you'll eventually know important people, because all the important people from the previous generation die off or retire, and pretty soon you're in line.
Yeah.
But this has to be a special temptation within the church, this desire to be near importance, to be near celebrity, to be near power and influence. Talk about that, if you will.
No, you're absolutely right, and I've seen it as well with in my years out here with various people in our church and others who come out here, you know, in order to see and be seen, and get invited to various activities, you know, days of prayer and so forth that are put on by the government, and you know, people are just itching to, you know, to get inside the doors of the White House, to get near a politician, and there is a real love of that. And yeah, the same thing goes on just within the church as well. But one of the very best examples I think of this was two examples. I won't name any names in the first one, but I was invited because of a connection with a parishioner. I was invited to a very prominent, important event being held in Washington D.C., and I was seated next to a very famous Christian leader. You'd know his name, and he couldn't have been more rude to me once he found out that I was a nobody in the Christian political scene. Not too far away from you, down in Marion, Illinois, I was invited to an ordination anniversary of a pastor there, and Al Berry, then the president of the Missouri Synod, came and sat down next to me, and I was just brand new out of seminary, and I was in the lowest place, and he came and sat down next to me and started talking to me as though I was the only person in the room. Within a minute or two, somebody came along and, you know, "Oh no, Dr. Berry, you know, we have a place of honor for you." But in my mind, he modeled this parable or this teaching of Jesus, because he took the lowest place and had to be brought up to the highest place.
Yeah, I mean, to remember that man is to remember a man who, in many ways, embodied a lot of what,
indeed,
of what Christ taught.
Yes,
and,
yeah,
and
very
who
much.
Christ was. So, how does the church avoid this? We talked about you talked about people kind of vying for spots in the church, but within the greater church body, within the body of believers, there is this temptation to want to, in that uniquely American way, let some of the glow rub off on you. I mean, Randy, your wife works in the big place, and she has regular conversations with the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. She probably comes home just glowing with importance.
She works right outside his door. She is up there in the hub of activity, and here I am, just this lowly parish pastor. She gets all the stories, all the glory, and guess what? I get to listen to it all. Yes, you're right. But yeah, we do that in the church, don't we? We put somebody like President Matthew Harrison up on this pedestal. He's a great leader. And yes, he is. I respect him a whole lot, especially his way of being a pastor in this office of president. But he is a man. And he does well to take the lowest place, like President Berry did in Pastor Esgut's story there. And so, yes, we need to do that more in the church, of say, it's just a man-made office. You know, he's still a man. He's still just a pastor as well. We've elevated him up there to be the leader of our church body. Now, the moment it goes to his head, we better play Jesus like Jesus does with the Pharisees.
Hopefully his wife will do that on a regular basis.
That's right. Or maybe my wife and somebody else's wife up there as well. But yeah, we have that temptation to want to elevate ourselves or elevate other people around us and then say, oh, let me touch that glow. Let me get a little smile from the leader there, shake his hand, get his autograph. Yes, we do that all over the place.
Pastor Eskett, bring it all home for us, if you would, with about a minute before we close our conversation here in our roundtable. You have emphasized several times here rightly that the only person who truly qualifies in himself to fit the words that Jesus speaks at the conclusion of this text is Jesus himself. How does he qualify to be the one who has humbled himself and therefore, in the truest sense of the word, deserves to be exalted?
Well, he fulfills the law perfectly in our stead, including the Sabbath law. He carries out the meaning of the Sabbath law and really the meaning of what it means to be a man. And then finally, you know, rests in the tomb, keeping the perfect Sabbath on Holy Saturday. And I think going back to the beginning of it, the whole idea of the Sabbath here, when we gather at divine service, we're gathering not to fulfill some sort of law, but to receive his merits, to receive his benefits, to receive his obedience, which is poured out upon us. So he, as the one who perfectly humbles himself, is rightly exalted, and we need to repent of our sins and stop exalting ourselves and simply come and as beggars and receive.
Derek in Sedalia, Missouri, if you'd send your name and mailing address to talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, we will send you the Lutheran Study Bible. Thanks for everybody with their questions or comments for our Pastor's Roundtable. Our Pastor's Roundtable, Pastor Randy Asbury, Pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in St. Louis. Randy, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Pastor Chris Eskett is Pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia. Chris, thank you.
Thanks so much. Always a joy.
When we come back, it's Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. on this Thursday afternoon. Terry Mattingly will be with us. We'll talk about media coverage of the spirituality of Steve Jobs. He had perhaps two spiritualities, his Buddhism and his business. Then we'll talk with Gretchen Pasentino about Harold Camping's End of the World prediction, the second one in the course of a year. This one coming in about 1 week or more, October 21st. He says it's all going to be destroyed, everything. His believers, his followers still remarkably believe him, even though he's had several failed attempts to predict the end of the world. I mean, I want you to think about this for a moment, that Christ has humbled himself. He has been that one who humbles himself and therefore deserves to be exalted. And Pastor Eskett is quite right. He is the one who answers his own question. Is it lawful to heal, to restore on the Sabbath? Of course, he answers it in the near term by doing it. By doing it for this man who has dropsy, but he's going to answer it ultimately on that Saturday, on that Sabbath, where he rests dead in the tomb. Do you think it's lawful? Do you think it's in keeping with the Sabbath to restore all things? Well, Jesus does. Because the Sabbath that he keeps for us in death, in his grave, before his resurrection, is kept to restore all things. That day he rests dead in the tomb is the eve of his restoring life to all creation and to us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., 7 minutes away.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.